Welcome in to another episode of We're Talking. We're talking basketball, raging Cajun basketball with a longtime Cajun fan, Mike Hebert. Good morning, Mike. How are you this morning?
I'm doing okay, Craig. How are you?
I am great. It's you got basketball tournaments going on, which is going to be fun. You got baseball season here in the college ranks. The pros have reported to camp. We got about 25 days till Major League Baseball starts. I know a lot of people think there's too many games, and I just love this time of year. Absolutely wonderful. So,
yeah, and the weather's starting to warm up too.
Yeah, I think we're due for another cold spell, though. Honestly, I don't know when it's going to be. I think we've got at least one more in us here.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Thursday, Friday.
Oh, I knew that.
Thursday,
I knew
Friday, somebody Saturday, was right when I'm headed to Pensacola. Well, I'm not headed there till Saturday. So maybe the rain will be done by then.
Right when I've got to deal it with baseball at the team. But that's for another day, another conversation. Let's jump right in, Mike. We go back to last Wednesday night. Cajuns hosted Arkansas State. Arkansas State's one of those teams that they're not very good, but they do have the ability to sneak up on teams and bite them in the butt. So what was your thoughts on the first half there?
Okay. Well, overall for Arkansas State's team, I'm surprised they only won three conference games. Well, I guess they won four since they beat ULM on Saturday. Because you look at their team and they say, they've got some talent on that team, you know, with Fields and El Sheik. And I don't know why they weren't able to pull it together. I know they lost a few games that they couldn't pull out, that they had the lead. Speaking of El Sheik, he's the guy who replaced the one who went over to Miami. Can't think of his name right now, but he was conference player of the year a year ago. So, the Red Wolves brought in another quality foreign inside player. And you could see it early in the game on Wednesday night when both teams went inside. I believe the score was 16-16, and all eight baskets for both teams had come from inside. You know, El Sheik was getting some offensive rebounds and kept the game close. You know, I guess it was about a few minutes after the second media timeout when the Cajuns were able to extend out to a double-figure lead. And the way they did that was with their defense. That's encouraged me about the Cajuns in the last few games. Even when they're not shooting, the defense has been pretty good, even the one they lost when they were at James Madison. El Sheik, a couple of times, you know, they doubled and made him put the ball on the floor when Joe Charles was in, which usually comes in about, you know, 10-minute mark or earlier. They got some steals when the big guy put the ball on the floor. That's never a good idea. And we got a double-figure lead. But then we couldn't really separate till the end of the half because the Red Wolves would stay close with Fields as their best guard. He got a few inside baskets by driving to the basket. And how many times have we said this year? But every time an opponent either makes a run on us, Greg Williams Jr. is the one who stems the tide with a key basket. We've said that how many times? Probably 20 times or so, maybe at least once every other game.
And if it's not him, it seems like other people have been stepping up at the right opportunity there. So it's good to see that. And let me go back to I know I'm going to miss El Sheik, Omar El Sheik.
I may not say his name. It's S-H-E-I-L-K. I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
He has a very quick first step, and I thought he did a great job. First step, getting to the basket and making baskets. And then it was like all of a sudden there was this this cover that was put on the basket. And he struggled for a while to make a basket until the game was really out of reach and into the second
half. Early and hot late.
Yes.
Yeah. And talking about his quick first step, he has a very quick first step on the rebounds. His instinct to get the rebounds. He ended up with a good rebounding numbers in this game. But anyway, so Greg, extends the lead back out. I noticed one thing. Our bench played a lot of minutes in the first half, but they only had 5 points. But, you know, they were usually 2 to 3 bench guys in there with a couple of starters. And I like to see the bench score a little bit more in the first half, but they did better in the second half. And we ended up with a 41-29 lead, and it was a very efficient offensive half. And I went back and I thought about it at halftime and say, Jordan Brown and Terrence Lewis II were actually working pretty well together by passing the ball inside to each other. You remember last week we talked about the coaches were trying to figure out ways to get Jordan the ball without just simply posting up. And early in the game, what I noticed was, okay, there's ball movement away from the ball from the big men, like trying to screen for each other, move from one side of the court to the other. And Jordan even getting the ball maybe in the free throw line area. And I think that was important and successful, and maybe led all the way into Friday night as well. So hopefully we'll see more of that, because you just can't stay in one place and throw the ball into the big guy every play. You know, you've got to actually find some different ways to get him the ball in scoring position. And they did that in the first half. I think our percentage in the first half is close to 60.
You know, I got to make sure I'm on the right one. I'm sorry. I apologize. 59.26. Very efficient. But any concern, and I guess kind of looking ahead at the next game too, but any concern that Kentrell Garnett is not scoring?
Yes, I'm concerned about that, and he'll need to score some in the tournament, of course, but he's also not shooting the ball.
Well, that's a great point. And I think you're seeing maybe some of his minutes being taken by Jalen Daucourt and Kobe Juelen a little bit too, maybe?
Yeah. Well, early in the year, we talked about Kentrell was got a real quick release and getting a shot off. He may be passing up some shots. That'd be another question for the coaches. But we talked about this before the season started, and a similar thing happened a year ago. Late in the year, Jalen started taking some of his minutes. And because of when the shot clock runs down, Jalen may be a little bit better driving to the basket than Kentrell. So we'll see. But I will say this, Kentrell played good defense as he has all year long, especially Friday night.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Do you think that his, because Jay and I talked about it a little bit yesterday, that his defense, maybe he's exerting a lot of energy, which I think he plays great defense. So that could be the reason he's not shooting as well or shots.
Would be. But again, you know, he may need to just to be a little more aggressive and take a few more. Yeah, that is when we talk about the box score, we can mention that and other things. But
okay,
second half, ready to go there?
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
Not as bad as in the previous four games, but the beginning of the second half was 7-1 Red Wolves. The 12-point lead got cut to 6 within 3 or 4 minutes. However, about a media timeout, the league was back to 9. But I began to be concerned about the slow start of the second half again. That seems to be a trend, and we can't have that continue. And part of that was a very questionable 4-point play allowed by Isaiah Richards when he was in quickly to give Jordan a break close to the media timeout. And maybe you don't want your center going out there and fouling a 3-point shooter on the baseline. But just as in the first half, Greg stemmed the tide. Excuse me. Yeah, and thinking about Greg, you know, not all of his baskets are just 3-pointers. Some of his baskets are in transition. And one of the things you like that is the point guard has pointed that you're running down the baseline, and if your point guard can hit you, what I call on the run, like a football pass, catch it where you can catch it and drive to the basket, you get a chance for an and one. He did that a couple of times. So I'm happy that some of his baskets were actually attacking the basket.
He's got a when we talk about first steps, he's got a great first step, and he's also very explosive going to the rim. And it just seems, I mean, when he goes up, it doesn't look like he's going up and then all of a sudden he's got a dunk, you know. And I know he probably didn't, I don't think he had one in that game, but you know what I'm talking about. He's done in the past.
Yes, but he did have a key and one.
Yes.
To bring the lead back out to double figures. You know, the half continues after that. You know, they made a little run. We countered it. It's pretty even there, you know, 8-12-point lead. And then the Cajuns can't separate. I always talk about separating is when you can get to the point where your double-figure lead gets to the point where the game's settled, basically, with 10 less minutes to go. The Wolves didn't allow that to happen until late in the game because they continued hitting the glass hard. They got some second shots. And the Cajuns ran them on the 3-point line and give the Wolves credit. They made some tough twos. One thing about a team like Arkansas State, with some talent late in the season here, they don't have a lot to play for. That can make them very dangerous because they played very loose. You know, notice that. No pressure on them at that point.
They're all kind of auditioning for next year. Who's going to be that guy that steps up? More than likely, I see their coach being gone after this season, which, you know, is not our decision. It's their AD's decision, but I see a lot of those guys possibly audition. They're basically audition, whether it's staying there at Arkansas State or transferring to another school.
Right. That's very true. Just like in the NFL or NBA, so there's no such thing as garbage minutes is what some people say.
Yep.
Because you're always auditioning for your job every time you're on the court or on the floor. And that's true. I don't expect their coach to be back, but that's not our decision. But they did play pretty loose. Let's talk about the bench a little bit. And unlike Friday night, Michael Thomas came in the game, and he seemed to struggle. Didn't get Timmons the minutes rest we liked. I don't know why that is. It's up and down. Players have it one day, players don't. And I've said before, it's the coach's job to figure out quickly when they get on the floor. It's his night or not.
Yeah, only 7 minutes played. And I don't know how much of that, I mean, in your opinion, do you think? I mean, because Themis played well. He played 32 minutes, 5 for 9 shooting, 5 rebounds, 11 points, 3 assists. I think we want that number to be a little bit higher for him. But, only 1 turnover again for our point guard.
No doubt Themis played well. So maybe Mike was in the game knowing that he wasn't going to stay in very long. Sometimes you press and you do that. And the guy you're backing up, you're in there just to give the guy a blow, and you're not going to play there long. So sometimes you press, that might be a factor. But on the other hand, Kobe Julian had, I thought, one of his better games.
Absolutely.
Yeah, coming in, he made some key baskets, and he's strong on defense. So that's good to see. And once the game ends, like I said, we'll get closer to the end, rather. You can't separate, but in the game, the time's just running out on the Red Wolves. And Jordan had let Elsheikh have some good numbers, but in the game, Jordan got a little motivated. He got some offensive rebounds and baskets himself to get himself to double figures, some good numbers, followed by his own inside baskets after the offensive rebounds. And so it ended up a double figure win. Everybody was very excited about Friday night. Friday night couldn't have happened without Wednesday night. You can't go undefeated in conference unless you win the first game. I mean, undefeated at home.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so just like we had some earlier games in the year, we talked about Marshall was a big game, but we had a big win against Texas State the night before. Every game means something. Not like in the NBA or Major League Baseball, where there's what I call schedule losses because of the travel. So, double-figure win. I went to look at the box scores, and I had some observations there. What did you observe from the box score to put a deeper dive into the game?
Well, I think one of them being that, you had 4 guys in double figures. It means we're moving the ball around. They can't key on one person. And for Jordan Brown to get 24 points is awesome. And then you got Kobe Julian, like you had talked about earlier, and Joe Charles right there with 9 and 8 points respectively. And not only that, Kobe had three rebounds and Joe had 5. So and Joe had 3 steals. So, it's one of those things that, well-balanced team at that point. And I think that's where a team that may not be as talented, Arkansas State, as the Cajuns, I think that's where you would like to see, like you said, separation more. Would we have liked to see a 20-point win? Probably so, but at the same time, the Cajuns took care of business.
Yeah, well, beyond the talk about the balanced scoring, 4 guys in double figures, 4 of the starters, and 1 guy off the bench has 9, another has 8. That's always a good sign. And you got balanced scoring. The Red Wolves hurt themselves from the line. I don't know why that is. I don't know how good free throw shooting team they are. But Fields made 8 out of 13, but he was driving the basket late in the game and had a couple chances for and 1. So if he makes a couple more, maybe it's a closer game. Of course, you never know how the Cajuns respond to that. Again, I really like Elsheikh. He did out-rebound Jordan. He ended up at 13. Of course, several of those were late in the game. Jordan cleared that out. Yeah, Kentrell Garnett needs to take more than 1 shot. He just needs to.
I agree.
Yeah. And he also that happened Friday night. And again, that's probably why Danny explained more minutes. And so my final thought is, again, that the Cajuns revised his scheme to get more touches out of his post-up work. I think they did. He seemed to move more without the ball early in each possession. We were just not standing there, and that allowed him to get the ball in a good spot and end up with 24 points. So good, what I call it, a good solid win.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that you look at too, The Cajuns were 75% from the free throw line. Jordan Brown, 8 for 11, which I know the next game we're going to talk about, not so much there, but he did everything else right, it seems like. But yeah, Greg Williams, you know, 4 for 4. Terrence Lewis, 3 for 4. And that's what you want out of your point guard and your guards. When they're getting fouled, you want them to make the shots for you.
Conference team was announced yesterday, and I was surprised Teemu's folks wasn't on the 13.
I just think there's so many teams, Mike, with 14 teams, they're not going to – I think it's one of those things that you're not going to – I think for SIDs, or I know it's probably supposed to be the coaches, but the SIDs are voting, they're probably not going to put that many guys on a team. And I'd have to look at the team if that was one of those – if anybody else had three guys on the
– Good question. I just think a guy who was in the top 10 in the country in assists, when there's the main responsibility of the point guard is to distribute the ball, you know, maybe deserve a little more recognition. But on the other hand, I always use these things as coaches always look at things, these little slices and things as motivational techniques, even though it doesn't mean a lot in the big scheme. Yep. But the team has had a really good game again, as he's had several, you know, good numbers across the board.
Yes.
And Joe had a good number, 8 points and 5 rebounds and 3 steals. I said early in the game when it was sort of tight, you know, everybody's going inside. Some of his defense, and when he doubled the ball with El Sheik in there, led to some turnovers, and that got allowed us to get the lead, which we never lost. It wasn't a wire-to-wire win, but it was close.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, solid win. So everybody then is excited about Friday night. And, you know, I was actually somewhat pleased with the crowd. I know baseball was gone at the same time in the first Friday night game. Beyond their the number being, you know, 3,500 or so, whatever it was, could have been better, of course, but understandable. But the intensity of the people in the crowd played. And I also think there are more people in there. A lot of people walked in at halftime. There were a lot of students. It's easy to miss those numbers. I mean, and when I went into the concession stand, I saw people like galore coming in from baseball at halftime. The baseball, unfortunately, ended right around then. And also high school playoffs were going on Friday night. You know, high schools do draw so, well, especially get to the playoffs. So that's the first thing I noticed. Okay, we got good energy in the building here with the fans. We know this is important. And everybody else, because of the ESPN2 broadcast, so that was good to see. Because, you know, the way they do the Cajun Dome now, they're basically not selling the people up in the upper deck. And, you know, makes it a good look on TV. But the actual game, it was just like the Arkansas State game. Early in the game, all the baskets were being scored inside. Jordan scoring, Samuel scoring a couple, and if not, he, some of the other bigs for South Alabama. But it was obvious Jordan was going to have a big night. Everybody in the building could see, okay, some nights your night and you could see it. He was just going to have it. Well,
do you think that was his best game in a Cajun uniform so far?
Best game without the free throw shooting.
Yes. Yes.
He had one of the early game. Maybe it was early against ULM where he had over 30, where he was scoring inside and scoring at the line.
Okay.
It was definitely his best game from the field. 13 out of 15 is hard to beat. And that's approaching 90%. And yep. They're not all dunks. Yeah. Like I said earlier, sometimes coaches can figure out who's got to go in the night and who doesn't. That's part of their job. So kept feeding it to them. But, you know, the game's close all the way through the first half. The Jags' offense wasn't anything very complicated. Their guards were just trying to dribble into the paint and just shoot over our guards. And they were somewhat successful. Make some, miss some. Isaiah Moore is a good player doing that. He's strong, got a big, you know, not that tall or something, but big bite, big body. And the Cajuns were cold from three. So I've heard some people say South Alabama's got one of the better defenses in the league. Well, right now they do. Earlier in the year they may not, but since they have had Samuel come back, you know, I think their strategy is that we're just going to bring our guards in there because we're not going to double because we're just dish it off to their 7-footer if they do. So, but the Cajuns' defense was solid. A key play I thought was preventing separation, which was when Kobe got a ball on the run and he, just like he did a couple of road games, he shot the ball too hard off the glass instead of dunking it. And that kept the game close. And another guy, a guy named left-handed named White for Alabama, you know, when their guards would penetrate and they couldn't score, they kick it back out to him. He made 3 out of 4 threes in the first half. And I can't say it was bad defense in the Cajuns. He just lofted it up, get it up high, get a good arc, and it fell in. And One of those was right at the half, gave the Jags a 29-28 lead. And one thing I question is, okay, we had a foul to give there, and we missed a normal shot with 20 seconds to go in the shot clock, and they get the ball back. We didn't really have a chance for a 2-for-1. Sometimes then I said, okay, maybe 5 or 6 seconds to go, take a foul.
Yeah.
And then we'd only foul five times, but then we weren't in the bonus. So that's one thing I questioned. But when he made that shot, one thing I did notice that gave me courage, the Cajuns are going to the locker room. They're not hanging their heads. They're still walking to the locker room with confidence. And, you know, we're going to get this done in the second half. You know, body language will tell you a lot. And so that told me a lot. It's okay. You know, it's going to be a battle well into the second half. And maybe I don't have to worry about this trend of starting the second half slow. And turned out I was right. Jordan continues to score from all areas. You know, he's one thing that's interesting about he's scoring, but Samuel is guarding him one-on-one. How many times we see other teams try to double Jordan all year long? And we keep talking about he's got to pass it out. They didn't do that till late in the game. So, but people may not have realized, okay, guy's 7 foot, but he's not the athlete Jordan is. Jordan's able to get moves around him and things like that. And, made some free throw line jump shots. Maybe he should shoot a jump shot on his free throws later in the game, you know. Left-handed shots, left-handed hooks, and some good moves, a couple of dunks. So, you know, that gives us the lead pretty quickly, but we're not separating. We're not separating at that point. I got another note I'll check. The Jags are staying close. But in the first half, we hit 0 threes. The Jags hit 4. Finally, Jalen hits one top of the key, and the lead gets to 5. And you feel so much better. But then, you know, there's another play that kept it close for a while. Right after Jalen's 3, we force a miss, and our 2 guys going for the rebound, and they basically fumble it right back to White, and he gets an and one. But again, you know, the Cajuns don't hang their heads when a key play goes against them. Key part of the game scores where Jordan actually gets us, you know, they get in a mismatch when he's guarding somebody up top, and he actually steals the ball and gets an and one back from Michael Thomas, who throws him a good pass. Michael Thomas played pretty well, you know, unlike the other night, you know, coaches, like I said, okay, whose night is it? And that night he was playing a little better than Tima, so he stayed in. And, you know, so we separate out the 7-8 point lead. Jordan struggling from the line. We talk about that 2-for-11. One time he was 1-for-8. He did make one of a front end of a 1-and-1, which is always critical, you know, kept the lead.
What are you seeing there? Do you think it's just a mental block at this point late in the season? Because the 2 nights before, he shot the free throws well.
Yeah, it got to be maybe a confidence thing on that night. Because he started to miss them short, and if he missed it short, the next one was long.
Yeah.
Maybe something in his technique was a little bit off. Maybe shooting a little quick. I know he himself said he's going to be in the gym shooting some free throws this week and prepare Rashad for the tournament. I think maybe he needs to shoot some free throws pregame. In fact, his dad mentioned that at one of the games he was at. I think I went to the McNeese game, and his dad was there because Jordan had just graduated, and he said Jordan needs to shoot free throws pregame. Maybe in his pregame warm-up, he just sit around and shoot some free throws, so that might be a good idea. Notice this, though, and I even talked to Coach Marlin about this before the season when Jordan was tweaking his free throw technique a little bit. I said maybe late in the game he needs to come out if he got the lead. That's exactly what happened. You know, he'd come in on offense, maybe come out on defense. The last 3 or 4 minutes, he didn't play at all. The strong defense kept the Cajuns in the lead. Once the late game comes situation, 3 minutes to go, the Wolves start fouling about that point, and Dalcourt and Thomas were money. Talk about that. They were 13 for 14 from the line late in the game. They just put the game away, those 2 guys off the bench. So shows how you need everyone all year long. The game lasted a long time because, you know, we just talked about the 2 bench guys, 2 guards, so just knocking down every free throw. But we also don't want to foul, or we don't want to let them have a 3-point shot. So we're taking away the 3, and we're letting them drive to the basket. So Moore gets a few of his points there. So not as much time is being taken off the clock as maybe could have been. But I think the Canes were confident, you know, our guys, we'll just match them two free throws to a basket or whatever, as long as we don't foul them. Maybe we should have gone zone there a little bit at the end. But, you know, finally, when we get the rebound, we got the 10-point lead with 30 seconds ago, we just dribble it out. So defense was the key in this game. They shot zero threes. They made zero threes in the second half. Up there, White made four in the first half. Some of them actually shot him a couple long. And you can tell that from the box score. Look at the turnover number. See what it is there?
18 to 9.
Jags had 18 turnovers. The Cages did a great job. And wow. No, I read that wrong. It does say, yeah, that can't be. Because I saw it more. But anyway, maybe I read that wrong. Maybe it was 8, but I did see one thing. The turnover, points off turnovers were 13-6 in favor of the Cajuns. So Cajuns turnovers got him in live balls. Well, I can remember at least 4 times where we got steals and ended up getting layups.
You know, if I would have told you when the game started, Greg Williams is going to have 2 points, Kentrell Garnett, 0 points, and Themis Faulx, 7 points, and Terrence Lewis, 8 points. I think we would all think that Cajuns are not going to win that game.
Yeah, but key on there was, even though the Cajuns were not having all their guys score, they all kept playing defense hard and rebounding hard.
I just, you know, you look
Greg at the 5 rebounds as well. Yeah, I noticed that too. The shots are not falling, but you keep playing hard. And That doesn't always happen. Sometimes you lack of offense, it'll give you, make you hang your head.
Absolutely. But, you know, the bench outscores South Alabama 29-13. And you talked about rebounds by Greg Williams. You know, even Isaiah Richards gets in there with 4. Joe Charles, 6. Michael Thomas with 4. Was that Michael Thomas's best game?
Yeah, even – don't look at the 2-for-8. Some of the shots he took were late in the shot clock. He was handling the ball well, not turning it over. He only had 1. He knocking his free throws. Yeah, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. Yeah, that was his best game in conference play. I remember against SMU, he had done very well in that overtime win back in November.
Yep.
Yeah. So the free throws between the two guys.
That's an amazing stat. Late in the game
were key in defense. And Joe only had 1 basket, but as usual, his defense was outstanding.
Yeah. 2 blocks, a steal, an assist, and like I said, 6 rebounds.
When Jordan was out late in the game, he was protecting the rim. He ended up getting 4 fouls because he was guarding some of their big guys. I mean, the quick guy driving to the basket. So, nice win on national TV. I wonder if Jordan had made 5 out of 11 free throws or 6 out of 11 instead of 2 out of 11, would he gotten player of the year instead of being the runner-up? Because that game was on TV, so.
You know, Jay and I talked about it a little bit yesterday, and it's one of those things that I don't know. He felt that Kinsley from Marshall or Jordan both were deserving of the player of the year. So, and the sad part is one's a guard and one's a, you know, center forward. It's kind of hard to compare those two if you want to talk about statistically. So they're doing different things.
Yeah. Yeah, and from what I recall, we talked about Kentrell Garnett. When we played Marshall, Kentrell did a great job on him. I don't think he had a very good game. He had some baskets late, you know. But,
well, they did the same thing against Crowley in the first game against Southern Miss. So,
and Crowley made our conference team.
Yep.
Yeah. So we haven't mentioned McGregor. Virginia did make the second team, which I think is probably where he belonged. And I will say this about the league: there's 14 teams now. It's not 10, 12 like there used to be. So, you know, some conferences have only 8 teams still. So it's tough to get everybody the recognition they deserve. And the addition of the new teams has made the quality of play a lot higher. If you go to the games, you can just tell. You know, this is a decent basketball being played in this league right now. It doesn't really matter in the national scheme of things, too, because there's only 7 or 8 conferences that are going to get multi-bids. There's 32 conferences. Over 20 of them are going to be single bids. So a lot of people complain about the Sun Belt being a one-belt league, but one bid league, but that's just the way it is in the mid-major world.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll have the five P5 schools. You'll have the American get some. and maybe one or two of the others.
Mike, let's move on to the tournament. I know that the Cajuns have first two rounds by to the quarterfinals. But if you look, the Cajuns will play the winner of Georgia Southern, ULM. I think just ULM is run out of gas, you know. But they've got 6 days off this time. Might have an opportunity for them to come out. But at the same time, Georgia Southern is the team that kind of scares you a little bit, I think, on our side of the back bracket.
Yeah, well, first time we played them when they had the 19-point lead, when they shot almost 70% from the field, they didn't have their forward named Sazeroff. And maybe that actually helped them because the Cajuns were planning, their game plan was to have Sazeroff. When you get a late scratch sometimes, it doesn't hurt you as much to think of that because the team may be prepared for a different game plan. But, you know, the crowd back in the game against Georgia Southern, you know, was also one just very similar to the last week where the intensity and the energy they brought helped fuel the team in that comeback. We won't have that this time, but on the other hand, maybe they won't shoot 70%. But let me say this back about the crowd, though. There's some nice videos out there of seeing the team celebrate the undefeated call, defending the dome all year long. And it's nice to see the team celebrate with the fans and students. So if you haven't seen some of those, check out Twitter, Rage Engage Men's Basketball page or on there. So you'll see some of those and you'll appreciate it. Yeah. ULM and Georgia Southern play Thursday. I don't remember what time.
7:30.
Yeah, okay. So I'm sure our guys will be watching that. Sometimes it's an advantage. Remember last year we played on Thursday and we were loose and played pretty well against Texas State, the number one seed on the Saturday. I was not surprised we beat Texas State, even though we were the eighth seed and they were the one, and simply because we didn't have our a healthy team in either of the two games we played Texas State. I think we're fairly healthy going into the game here. And we'll have 8 days off. We play Friday. We won't play until Saturday. I worry a little bit about Russ. Like you, I presume it's going to be Georgia Southern. Will we see the Georgia Southern team that shot 70%, or will we see the team that got outscored by 26 in the second half when the Cajuns came from 19 down to win by 7? In their last game, Georgia Southern did play App. They finished 9-9 in the league. App finished 9-9 in the league, too. Georgia Southern ended up, I think they're 16-15. So they didn't win a winning record with that win. I've noticed beyond our game, too. I remember a game against Marshall. They had a game they lost, and they had an 8-point lead with 3 minutes to go and got a couple of key turnovers. Marshall made a couple of threes. So they seem to have a habit of maybe falling a little short right at the end of the game, which tells me one thing. It scares me because it tells me they've got talent to have the league going into the game. Sazeroff didn't play against us as their best guy with 28 points against Georgia Southern. I think Gordon A. Brown also had a pretty good game against us, and he had double figures in their last win. We'll have to see. We play 7:30 on Saturday, and we'll have 48 hours, I guess, to digest the film. And beyond that, who knows what's going to happen. South Alabama plays Southern Mississippi, an 8-1. South Alabama's maybe one of the best 8 seeds in the country.
Well, that I wanted to talk about the bracket a little bit because while I do think Georgia Southern, Marshall, and Old Dominion on our side are the Cajuns could have some issues there, but at the same time, the other side of the bracket with South Alabama and Troy, James Madison and Southern Miss, that's going to be some killer games right there, in my opinion.
Any of those four teams could come out. The reason South Alabama is number 8 versus being 5 or 6 is because they missed Samuel, their big man, for a few games. After he played, he hurt his knee right before he played us. And I have no doubt that if he'd been available, they would have probably been in the top 5 or 6. Because you could tell it in the year. They won 8 out of 9. Recall, less than 2 weeks ago, they blew Southern Miss out on their home court by well over 20.
Yep.
The league got to 30 at one point.
I think it was 39, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So
it was crazy.
You maybe throw that game away. Just one of those things you just can't explain. It happens when one team's hot, one team's off, and it's a travel game. I don't know how well South Alabama's going to draw, but they are the closest team to Pensacola. So when they play on Saturday, earlier in the day, I think that's the 11:30 game. It wouldn't surprise me. South Alabama has a few more fans there than Southern Miss. Although Southern Miss has had such a great year, some of their fans are going to travel, I'm sure. But you know, that it would not surprise me to see South Alabama win. It wouldn't surprise me if Southern Miss wins. But it's not going to be a normal 1-8 game. That's for sure. But that's the other side of the bracket.
But, I guess, you know,
on our side.
I just going back to, you know, Southern Miss and South Alabama, they're really mirror teams in the sense of they both brought in a lot of transfers and everything. It's just that South Alabama's coach got them playing better earlier in the year, and now Rich Riley has his team playing good in the year. I'm not saying better than Southern Miss, but they really are playing well right now and is a scary team.
Yeah. Well, yes, they had won 8 out of 9 before the game Friday night. And had some blowouts and beat some good teams. Yes, they're very scary. On our side, beyond Georgia Southern, you know, and look, you know, we're assuming Georgia Southern's going to win. ULM is going to have 6 days to rest, and they start making some threes, and they could pull the upset. Yeah, it's not a definite that, you know, we're going to be playing Georgia Southern. We're presuming it's the most likely case.
Yeah.
And I guess after that, our if you go to the bracket seedings, I guess Marshall's our most likely opponent in the second round if we happen to be successful in the first round. Is that correct?
Yes.
Who's Marshall play?
They're going to play, Texas State and Georgia State play to play Old Dominion, and the winner of that game will play Marshall. I mean, you could make a case for any one of the top four seeds losing, but you could also make a case for any of the top four seeds being chalk and moving on to the next round. So I think this is the best balance I think that the Sun Belt has had in a long time.
Yeah. Well, Marshall and Old Dominion just played, didn't they? It's been interesting in that game because let's say they play again. Let's say Old Dominion advances. Marshall had a chance to be the number one seed and get the automatic bid to the NIT, and they blew it on Friday night.
Yep.
So either they'll have a view of, they'll be discouraged and maybe not have the right attitude, or they're going to come back in and say, okay, we're going to show Dominion that, you know, they're not the team that we're not the team that let you beat us on Friday night. So Marshall probably, Crap and Foot has said this, is he reminds him of one of the old ABA teams, was to get up on the court, shoot quickly, a lot of finesse, but they have their 7-footer now too. Their 7-footer is a finesse player. Jordan had a good game against him too, if you remember back then. We actually took the ball right to the basket against him and got him in foul trouble.
There's one guy that kind of scares me. I forgot. I can't pronounce his name even if I was looking at it. But the game that we played last year up at Marshall, I think he had 5 blocks, 6 blocks, mainly coming from behind our players and blocking it from behind. So that's one thing we're definitely going to have to watch out if we end up playing Marshall at any point.
When we played Marshall, was the night the Cajun Chicken came back and we had our biggest crowd in a couple of years. And there was a lot of intensity and energy. But we need to maintain that energy without having the crowd there to provide it if we end up playing the Thundering Herd, because they're going to score. Now, Old Dominion also, I don't remember much about them because we played them so long ago, but I know they had a big lead at halftime against us. We came back. Had a chance to win the game late. Big three by Old Dominion prevented our comeback. But, you know, I think we didn't play our best game that day because we were still a little down from the loss to Coastal. Calls went against us.
That was definitely one of those games that the team before beat you twice, just like when we lost to Southern Miss and then going to James Madison. I think Southern Miss beat us
to Troy. James Madison was after the ULM.
Okay, that's right. I apologize. Yes. Yeah. But the point being is that it's definitely – it's the hangover effect. It's not what you want to see out of your team. And Coach Robe used to talk that a lot about that. You can't let a team beat you twice. And I think in those situations, that happened twice this year.
Yeah, and also, we were also traveling both times.
Yes.
Which could have been a factor. One thing that encouraged me for the Cajuns is the defense has seemed to improve in the last few games. We've been a pretty good offensive team most of the year. If Jordan scores, we'll kick it back out. The threes are not falling quite as easily right now in the last few games. Thursday night's game, Wednesday night's game, then we were 5-for-14, which is sort of normal. To win a game when you shoot 2-for-16 and 2-for-50, whatever it was like we did the other night, it's encouraging because it means your defense is stepping up. And at times, even some of the road losses, we've had some good defensive efforts. You know, we're on neutral court now. The energy provided by the opponents. You know, when we lost some second half leads, I mentioned last week, our last three road games, we've had second half leads in every one of them. And thank God the situation or the crowd, whatever, gave energy to the opponent, which is they're going to do. So now you have to create your own energy because the crowds won't be much of a factor. I know we have a few fans going, but I'm sure a lot of fans are going for all the nearby schools, Southern Miss, yep, South Alabama, et cetera.
I think the key here, in my opinion, if you go back and look, like you talked about the better defense, when our defense is good, especially defending the 3-point line. And I know people are going to get pissed. You're going to say, hey, that's an easy, you can't give them that easy bucket under the basket. But if we're shooting well from the 3-point line, I'm willing to trade 3 points for 2 points every time down the court. Because you don't want them, especially a team like South Alabama or James Madison, all of them really, ULM. You don't want to allow them to get hot from the 3-point line and just start pulling away from you. Sooner or later, it's come back to bite you in the butt.
Well, it's good to see that our 3-point defense has improved in recent games because early in the year, coaches talked a lot about that. That was going to be a priority in the defense. Take away the three, run people off the line. But for a while, we were on the poor teams in the league in stopping the 3-pointer. That didn't make any sense because you were going to – your priority in preseason and when you got in the conference play, you weren't accomplishing it. Why that is, I don't know. Maybe we were sometimes we got – fakes on the 3-point shot and he just steps around you. We're doing that sometimes. Or it could just be that we were playing some road games at that time and the other teams were knocking them down. So that was a disappointment to me for most of the season. You know, we didn't do as well defending the three as I hope. I'd like to see our bench score a few more points. It was good to see the last few games that's happening, the last two home games. About done here, you know, analyzing this again, 7:30, 7:30, and 6, and I'm assuming we're going to play at 6 o'clock on Monday night, but, you know, there's no guarantees. You know, we could be one and done. 7:30 is the game on Saturday. If we're successful, we'll play at 7:30 on Sunday, and if we're successful, we'll play at 6 o'clock on Monday.
Do you think, and I understand why they did this, and I'm okay with it, but does having days off like Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, does that diminish your bye? I mean, the other team still has to play, like Texas State or Georgia State would have to play two games to get to you, or actually three games to get to you. But Georgia Southern and ULM playing on Thursday and then having Friday off, obviously it helps Georgia Southern, but at the same time, I guess the Cajuns having a full week off, a full 8 days off, that should be good for their legs. Did I make any sense there?
Yes, you did. It does diminish the bye in some way because you just get out of rhythm. That's a long time to go, 8 days without actually playing a true game when you've been playing two games a week since, you know, December.
Everybody
got to do that. You know, you got to maybe have some intense practices, but not to the point where you're injuring guys. You got to find a balance there.
I think we're going to have more fans than we think there. I don't think it's going to be one of those games where we have a couple thousand or 1,000 there that we used to sometimes bring at UNO in 2014, the championship game when Elford had the steal at the end of the game and the basket. I don't think it's going to be those types of crowds, but I think we're going to have a pretty good crowd there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I know in the rebounders numbers, they probably at least 50 of those are going.
Well, I know some people that, you know, just, you know, I won't call them casual fans. They're very invested in this team and thought this team deserved good crowds all year long. They're going. So it's nice to see that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, I know people say, well, we get to the finals, I want to go, but that's a Monday night.
Yeah. Yeah.
The conference actually went to the Pensacola deal and we play our conference tournament 1 week earlier than the big schools. And it's because what Pensacola offered us. And maybe we get that game on Monday night where it's a better television view. When you're not competing in some of the bigger schools. But in some ways, I prefer finishing the season at the same time as the bigger schools.
I agree, because then again, you've got that layoff. But at the same time, it all depends how you use that layoff in between. Because then, you know, Monday night, then you probably play, you're probably 8 or 9 days again that you have a layoff. So,
right, if you happen to be successful.
Yeah. Yes.
So next time we visit, the conference tournament will be over. And we'll be hopefully talking about the Cajuns in postseason play.
Absolutely.
Regardless, give credit to the guys for winning 23 games. Here's a key point, too. 20 games wins. It's not like it used to be, but we won 20 D1 games. We went 20-7 in D1 games. And if you take the non-D1s out, and you know, for all the other schools, there's still not many teams who win 20 D1 games in the regular season.
The thing that I like about this team is, you know, we talk about how hard it is to win on the road, and also it's not easy to defend at home, even, because we saw that. It's been nearly 40 years in the Cajun Dome, and this is the first team to go undefeated there. And you can talk about competition all you want, that it was different back in the day when Marty was here or Jesse Evans, but still, it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, you could have that one bad shooting night, or the opponent could have a great shooting night. We talked about the Georgia Southern game. You know, when they led by 19, that would have been the one you would have said, okay, it's not our night. And that's going to happen. There's over 350 Division I schools. I don't remember the number now, but the last week we said there was a 14, 15 schools. That was it.
Yep.
That had been undefeated at home. So it's a small number. The last time we did it, I think, was 1983, which was in the Bobby Pascal years. That was the Greater Warner teams, things like that.
That was
around exactly.
That was probably my favorite team. Just, I was a freshman here at USL at the time. And I in my opinion, if you look statistically, and I know you, it's hard to talk about errors and everything, but I thought Graylin Warner was the best all-around player we had, in the top 20 in scoring, in the top 20 in rebounds, in the top 20 in assists. And, you know, there's just so many things that he did well. I'm a huge fan of Graylin Warner.
Yeah. Well, Deion Brown, George's dad, played on that team.
Yeah.
And interesting to think about this team. You know, we got a legacy player.
Two.
Right. And then Kobe's dad, Wayne, and played a few years before that with Andrew Toney, finished in 1980-81. And we've got two local guys, and Greg Williams Jr. and Jalen Dockwart. So there's a lot of family connections here. And speaking of that, I see a lot of pictures on social media where a lot of the parents of these players get together, those are local, for meals and things like that, and support the team throughout. So that's nice to see.
Go Charles.
Our guys, I've said this before, but it's the way to end the pod is they play hard. They play for each other. Everybody on the team puts the team first and their number second. Even Jordan, you know, his great numbers are fine, but you know, he's more than willing to pass the ball out. They're generally well prepared. They celebrate each other's successes. And when things go bad for one, they try to pump each other up and encourage each other. So these guys deserve a lot of recognition, congratulations on what they've accomplished so far, and they're not done yet.
Absolutely, Mike. You mentioned it at halftime of the South Alabama game. They didn't walk off hanging their heads, but at the same time, you can see it on the bench when somebody's pulled out. They're not frustrated. They're not pouting on the bench. These guys are ready with everything, so it's fun to watch.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be fun this weekend.
Yes, sir. Hopefully we're talking about a trip to the NCAA tournament next week. And are you headed to Pensacola at all?
Yeah, I'm headed there Saturday. Taking a ride with a friend of mine. My wife's got jury duty on Monday, so she can't make it. Even though we have friends in Pensacola, she would have loved to.
Oh.
And my granddaughter's one-year-old birthday party is, you know, I celebrated with her yesterday. It's going to be this weekend, so I already planned to go to Pensacola before that came up. But I'm headed there Saturday along with some other fans.
Good. Safe travels, Mike. Bring back a victory. Looking forward to watching it on the TV. I've got other commitments right now that unfortunately do not allow me to make the trip. So
speaking of that, I think the first two rounds, I know they're on ESPN Plus, and you want to hear Dan McDonald, and you'll hear some national guy, I'm sure, because they usually send somebody who covers all the games.
Right.
But the championship game, is it ESPN2 or ESPN?
ESPN2.
Yeah. Okay. 6 o'clock Monday night.
Yep.
All right. So hopefully people will be watching that. If they're still in town, then we get that for.
Well, Mike, thank you for your time today. I appreciate it as always. Fun talking basketball with you, and hopefully we got one more or two more or three more in this. So,
yeah, hopefully so. Thanks. Nice listening with you all season, Craig. Enjoy these conversations.
Thanks. You've been listening to We're Talking. We've been talking basketball. Raging Cajun basketball with longtime Cajun fan Mike Hebert.
Any redistribution or reproduction of any part or all of the contents in any form is prohibited, except, who the hell are we kidding? Distribute it, share it, put it in your podcast, broadcast it, or put it on social media. Just give credit where credit's due.